Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, January 6th, 2013. This is episode 942. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest thing at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers and the internet, and cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. Almost didn't make it on time today. Just walked in the door because I was packing for Las Vegas right after the show. I'm heading out. And I was thinking, how many years have I been going to this Consumer Electronics Show? And then in the years before that, the Comdex Show, which was an even bigger event, I think. Huge trade show in Las Vegas. This year, 150,000 dealers. It's supposed to be for dealers. And press. And I think it's almost press. More press than dealers now. Will converge on Las Vegas. They're all arriving today, which means there'll be no cabs available. It's really a nightmare. You'll hear everybody who goes to this complain about it, and then you'll hear everybody who doesn't go, how could you complain? I'm so jealous. You get to go to CES. There'll be 10,000 booths filled with delectable electronic goodies. The future of technology on display. A giant smorgasbord. Yeah, well, try it someday. I don't even know why it exists. I'm trying to figure it out because I tell you, it isn't fun. It's miserable. It's so crowded and there's so much, and no product can get more than 30 seconds of your attention because then there's another and another and another, and it's just impossible. And it's a very competitive for the press, as you might imagine. Very very tough for the press. Because, everybody's there, and Gadget sends 40 people. The Verge sends 40 people. Even the television networks, NBC and CBS, are there. Even Spike. I don't know if Spike's there this year. They were there last year. that's a cable channel. And they're all vying to get the scoop, the story, you know. It's just crazy. And I've been doing this for many, many years. Started doing the radio show from CES in 2004. That was when it was still on over the weekends. They changed that either last year or the year before. I think it was last year. So that it's all weekday, which means I can't do the radio show from there. And frankly, that was fun. That was kind of cool because I could just sit there and people would troop in front of me one after the other, product after product. I'm not convinced it was a great way to cover anything. I don't know how much people learn from that, but it sure is spectacle. It sure is an amazing spectacle. I'm sorry, The Verge, according to P. Practic in our chat room, is sending 60 people, and CNET is sending 90 people. Yow! It's such a scene. It's hard to even imagine. It's the closest thing to the Romans and the lions and the Christians and the Colosseum that in the modern world I could think of. So it's with mixed feelings I go there. A lot of nostalgia. It's, of course, part of the reason people do this, and I imagine the reason it's still around, is it's a social event. It's a chance, even for the dealers who, the Consumer Electronics Show really was originally to, just like the Computer Dealers Exposition, or Comdex, was originally to bring dealers together with manufacturers And so they can make deals. Yeah, I'll take 3,000 of those iPhone cases, and why don't you throw in a few of those HD TVs? I might be able to sell those. For them to get an idea of, you know, what might be coming for the holiday season, because a lot of what you see at CES isn't even out until the fall. Sometimes never comes out. That's part of the frustration of CES, is that you see stuff. You could talk about it, but it's kind of why talk about it. It may never arrive. Last year, we spent a lot of time talking about these beautiful OLED, organic light-emitting diode television sets. Samsung and LG had them, and they assured us they were beautiful, 50 inches, 55 inches. They assured us, yep, we'll be selling these in the fall. We don't know what the price point is, but we'll sell them in the fall. And LG has now just announced it. Yeah, maybe they'll have it this spring in Japan only for, what did they say, $11,000? And it's like, oh. Ooh. But they couldn't get them out in time. They never did get them out this year. And they say they'll have them in Japan only. I think they're having a hard time making them. But we don't know. Somebody in the chat room says, you can't beat face-to-face interaction. I think you can. I think that this is one thing the internet probably will put out of business in the next few years, just because it doesn't, for instance, Microsoft's not there this year. It made more sense for Microsoft to do a Windows 8 event in October where they controlled it. It was them and them alone. They could show all the computers. They get all the press attention. There's no competition. There's no cab lines. It's much easier for everyone involved. And so Microsoft, for the first time ever, will not be keynoting, will not be giving the big inaugural speech, which would normally be Monday night. It won't be doing that this year. Instead, it's Qualcomm. Who are they? Well, they make chips for smartphones. That's the big keynote. Even Ford. Usually the CEO of Ford, Alan Mulally, last few years has been there giving a keynote. And I know Ford plans, as do all the auto manufacturers, to make announcements at CES. But Ford's, I don't think Alan's there. He's not giving a speech anyway. And I think the reason is they want to be there because they want to emphasize, all the car manufacturers want to emphasize, our cars are consumer electronics devices now. We've got computer technology in these things. These are smart cars. So they want you to kind of understand that. But I don't think that that's their important constituency. They do the Detroit Auto Show and the other auto shows. That's the auto press is there. So going to CES for an auto company, GM is there, I know, and Chevy's there, well, that's GM, isn't it? I don't know. I can't tell you. Ford's there. But they go there really more as a way of just saying, yeah, see, we're consumer electronics, than of, this is our big show. It isn't. It's a very interesting cultural experience, and I'm dreading it, I have to say. Every year, everybody I know in the business says, oh, this year I'm not going to CES. And every year, you have to go. You really do. We'll have CES coverage. I'll be talking, of course, about it today, what we'll be looking forward to. Some interesting stuff, actually, mostly in the TV realm. CES, last 3 or 4 years, has really been a show about television sets more than anything else. And there'll be some interesting, I think, TV announcements. And I'll come back next week on the show, and I'll tell you what I learned. I'll probably have a sore throat. I might have lost my voice. We'll see. That's the other thing about CES. This year, in particular, we have apparently a very bad flu season, which has already hit the West Coast. Usually waits till February, so it's smack dab in the middle of a particularly bad flu, which pretty much guarantees that every single one of the 150,000 people going to CES is going to come back sick as a dog. Incredible! Is it too late to get a flu shot? Dr. Mom in our chat room, quick. It probably wouldn't make any difference now, would it? It's probably too late. It just weakened me. It's a germ orgy, as Web 7905 says in our chat room. Mm-hmm. 8888-ASK-LEO. You can tell me if there's something you want to know about. I'm going to be looking, for instance, Samsung has a, I don't know what they're going to announce, some sort of strange, is it a see-through TV? They say it's a new shape for television. I don't know what this could be. Lots of speculation around that. Of course, you get there and they'll probably just say, look, we're making OLED TVs. Yeah, you said that last year. But they, you know, the whole thing is send out a, they learn, Samsung has learned so well from Apple. Send out a cryptic invitation and everybody will speculate for days and you'll get a lot of extra press. Westinghouse, 110-inch double density 4K TV. I'll be interested in that. What do you want me to talk about? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll find it for you. Little flu germs coming straight at you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, Smokey Bear in our chat room says, zinc lozenges, vitamin C, and lots of hand washing. Got it. Done. Bringing a gallon of Purell with me. You're going to sanitize. You know, there are a few people. I know there's one tech journalist. I think he's branded as crazy as a result, but refuses to shake hands. He says shaking hands is the worst idea. We should elbow bump instead of shaking hands. I know Howie Mandel doesn't shake hands, but that's just in general. Maybe I'll wear a hazmat suit. That's a good idea, Theater Monkey. It's Mike Arrington. I I'm very passive aggressive. So whenever I see Mike, I go, Mike, how are you? And I reach my hand out, you know, for a big hearty handshake. Now I'm going to pay the price for it. I am. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you're in the Vegas area, I'm going to be giving a talk tomorrow at the New Media Expo. You can get 20% off admission by using the offer code LEO20. I'll be signing autographs, shaking hands, and catching the flu at 1. And then speaking at 4, spreading the flu at 4 p.m. And then hosting the podcast awards that evening. That'll be fun. Another great opportunity. And then CES starts officially on Tuesday, and I'll be at the Ford booth, Stitcher, on behalf of Stitcher, which is a podcast program. Really cool iPhone and Android app that gets you talking shows, spoken word programming. And Stitcher's put together a whole program at the Ford booth of interviews and stuff. I'm going to do a panel on connected cars. I'll be talking with the CTO of Ford, Paul Mascarenhas, so that'll be fun. And then in between the little interviews, I'll be wandering around trying to find that crazy Samsung TV, for instance. We were talking about that before the break. Samsung sent out an invitation. This is the thing that's getting everybody all at Twitter. This is what the invitation said. A true innovation of TV design is coming up with an unprecedented new TV shape. Not a rectangle. And timeless gallery design. What? 8888-ASK-LEO. We don't have to talk about CES. Anything that's on your mind, if it has to do with a technology, with a chip, a computer, the internet, digital photography, that kind of thing. John's on the line, our first call of the day. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm George.
George will work, too. Hi, George. Sorry. What can I do for you?
Oh, well, first of all, I want to wish you and all your crew there at the Brick House Happy New Year.
Thank you.
And I have a quick comment and two short questions.
Okay.
The comment is that the phone that's behind your left shoulder up on the shelf, that black telephone.
Yeah, it's the old style, you know, 1920s, where you clicked on it and you go, operator, give me central.
No, that has a dial. Look, you can see it has a dial. That was our very first phone.
Well, that one. That was your first. Oh, you're talking about the one above. See, I have several old phones behind me. I have a, for those who don't, you know, this is a radio show. So as far as anybody knows, I'm sitting in a featureless gray room. But in fact, I'm not. I have, and George knows this because he watches this streaming video we do of this. I have all sorts of historic gadgets behind me, including, yeah, that's that old phone. That was your first phone, huh, George?
Yeah, and what I do, I use that phone number. And bring it into the modern world, that's my PIN numbers on a lot of my stuff that I use.
Well, so it's not that. You just gave that away.
Well, nobody knows the phone number.
Don't say your last name. You know what's cool about that phone? And one of the reasons I have that there is because it has a dial. And we still say, don't we, dial the phone.
Yes.
And, in fact, if you look at an iPhone, in fact, this is one of the issues in the Samsung-Apple lawsuit. Apple said, they copied our icon. And so what is the icon on an Apple iPhone? It's something you haven't seen in ages. It's a handset, a telephone handset, you know, with the you put up to. I don't know if kids know anything about dials or handsets, and yet that's the icon.
Yeah. My question I have an old program. I mean, not real old. It's Printmaster Gold.
Oh, yeah.
And when I upgraded from Windows XP to Windows 7, it doesn't work because of the drivers. Is there anybody in the world that can make drivers for that program for me so I can use it? It's such an easy program to use. The graphics are beautiful. You got tons of graphics. I don't want to lose that program. And the one that they gave me or told me to buy is called, you know, I don't want to mention what, POS. You know what that means. It's no good. So I want to use that. I want to use that Printmaster Gold program.
Yeah, was that Broderbund who made that?
Yes, Broderbund. I called them, and they said, well, they don't have any drivers.
Did anybody answer? I'm surprised. I didn't know Broderbund was still in business. They probably were using this phone when they answered. Hello, Broderbund. Nobody's left yet. It's sad because Broderbund was just down the road a piece here, and they were a great company, made wonderful software. They did a whole bunch of educational stuff, but they really, I'm surprised. I didn't know anybody who was still there, but I don't know what they're doing nowadays.
Yeah, but they don't have any idea who can make drivers for that program for me. So, I love that program. But
well, this is the problem, unfortunately, when you move into the future, sometimes you leave people behind. I do see Printmaster 2012 Platinum from Broderbund.
Yeah.
So they still exist. They still sell it. Have you tried the new version? It's only $40.
No. I should try it. Maybe I'll try it.
That might be the solution because, see, okay, there's a couple of things you can do. When you're running Windows 7, there is a compatibility mode. So when you launch the program, before you double-click the icon, right-click on it, select compatibility mode, and tell Windows 7 to lie, basically, is what you're doing. You're saying, Windows 7, tell Printmaster that this is Windows XP. And a lot of times that'll work, because you know what they do with these I don't think it's a driver issue. I really don't. It could be, I guess. What kind of drivers does Printmaster need? It should just use the drivers for your printer that you got. Unless you're using a dot matrix printer. Superman says, are you printing using your dot matrix printer to print banners? Welcome home. So there's two choices. First thing I do, you don't want to spend any money. I understand that. Try compatibility mode. Windows 7 has that. Makes it act as if it's Windows XP. If that doesn't work, they do have Printmaster. I'm surprised that when you call Broderbund, hello? Broderbund? Yeah, we're still here. We got Printmaster 2012 Platinum. Well, I'll sell it to you. It's only $39.99. I would just try that. I mean, what, you know, that's got to work with Windows 7. Well, you wouldn't, in this day and age, put out a program that didn't work with the latest version of Windows 8. 7. Now, Windows 8, I don't know. Have you tried Windows 8 yet? Let's talk a little bit about that. I just saw a very funny video saying this is the worst junk ever. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by, you know, I think it's a good idea, before you hear about what's going on at CES, to get rid of your old stuff. You know there's going to be some new gadgets you want. You can go get a quote now. No obligation. It's good for 30 days at Gazelle.com. Gazelle is where you go to sell your old stuff. Gazelle is a great, great place for finding the best price for your iPhone, your old cell phone, your iPad. Let's say you want an iPad mini. You've got your third generation iPad, AT&T, 64 gig. Well, I wonder what that's. Well, $365. That pays for the iPad mini. That's cool. Isn't that nice? So then you press this button that says add to a box. That quote is good for 30 days. Once you've got all your stuff together, you say, send me that box. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. And they'll send you a check or PayPal or an Amazon gift card. It really is a great deal. I want you to try it out. Gazelle.com. No obligation. Just get a quote. I bet when you see how much your stuff is worth, you go, you know, maybe it's time to sell that that old Galaxy S3 and get a Galaxy Note 2. Or let's see, what the Galaxy S3 on AT&T. Good condition, free of water damage, $274. That's awesome. Now I can get my Galaxy Note. Gazelle.com. Pay it forward. The best way to recycle is to sell your old gadget at Gazelle.
Answer your text.
I'm buying this. Somebody in the chat room gave me a link to SparkFun, which is a great little electronics project site. Everybody should know about SparkFun. And they're selling a phone. It's obviously a retrofitted Western Electric phone. What's the... Joe, do you know what the handset is? What the model number of that is?
That's a G handset.
That's a G handset. That's that old. That's the icon right
that's
there.
A, that's the 500 set. That's the most common telephone.
Most common telephone on the planet is a 500 set. But what they've done is they've modified the guts to be a cell phone. So you plug a SIM card in there, T-Mobile. I don't know if work. I guess it'd work with AT&T or T-Mobile. You plug your SIM card in there. The phone rings with the old bells. Bring.
So they got to make 86 volts.
Obviously you have to plug it in, right? And then it has a dial tone. I don't know how it does the dial tone.
Generates it inside.
Does internally. I'm buying this, except I probably shouldn't have mentioned this on the air. There's only three left, and I'm sure they'll be gone by the time I get my credit. SparkFun is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you. I want that on my desk. Bring. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Ring my chimes, honey. Jeff in Marshall, Illinois. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
That's going well. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. I've got a little problem, though, here. You've been talking about telephones, and I happen to be having a problem with too many telemarketers calling me.
I hate that.
I know, and what I'm trying to do is I'm running a small business here, and I'm just getting so many calls from all these telemarketers, and they're all scammers. If you look these guys up on Google, and you always end up on 800 notes.com, I think it is.
Yeah, there's definitely scammers.
Oh yeah,
and the problem is because they're scammers, they don't care about, you know, there is a do not call registry,
right?
And if it's a legitimate outfit, you know, if it's a charity or just, you know, a timeshare company, it's some legitimate outfit. All you have to do is say, oh, I appreciate it. I don't buy anything over the phone, but please put me on your do not call list. In fact, if it's a business, all you have to do is say, hey, this is a business. Or if you say this is a cell number, or just say do not call. If they're legitimate, they can't call you again. It's a violation of federal law. However, they're not.
Exactly.
don't care. They subscribe, as somebody in our chat room says, to the do not care registry.
Yeah. And I've tried a couple things to try and block these numbers. I got like a box one
they
time.
They use different numbers every time, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like email.
Yeah, because they're using VoIP. They're not using a real phone system. They're using it over the internet. So you're really kind of out of luck, I think. I think we just have to live with these guys. Now, I have an unlisted number, have for years, so I don't get many legitimate telemarketer calls. An enemy of mine gave a Chinese pharmaceutical company my number, and they call me every once in a while. It's the funniest thing ever. They actually call they don't call my home. They call the office, and they say, oh, Leo, Leo's wife told us he needs to buy a certain product. and it's quite embarrassing to the office staff when they answer that. They think it's real. I finally had to explain. No, it's not real. That's fake. You can just hang up on them. eventually they just stopped, I guess, because in some ways they are legitimate as well, because it is some use of their time, and if they're never going to get a sale, they're not going to call you back. In your case, because it's scammers, it's just random dial, and you're just unlucky. You're going to get, they're going to, yeah. I don't know what you can do about it.
And since I'm a business, you know, it's not like I can change my number because I've had this number.
Right, no. And it can't be unlisted or nobody would call you.
Yeah. I thought about trying Ring Central because I've seen that you can just keep putting
the number in there. Yes.
That just seems like an extreme.
I don't think it'll work because I don't think they ever use the same number twice. I mean, if they do, if you notice the same number twice, well, maybe it would work. I love Ring Central, but they're a sponsor, I should mention. We use it. And it's virtual, so you could bring your office number over to it. You're not going to lose your number. It's portable. So that's a nice thing. And they do have some additional features. You know, you might try that where, again, if you're business, it's harder. If you're a homeowner and you could actually say, for instance, I use Google Voice at home, and I say only these calls should go to ring the phone. The rest of them, you know, if you're in my contact list, it's okay to ring my phone. Otherwise, go straight to voicemail. And I don't even hear the calls, and now then I can just ignore them and voicemail. But see, that won't work for a business because you don't know who's calling you. It's the same reason why you can denial of service DDoS a website. Websites are often brought down by being overwhelmed with traffic. And that's how the bad guys do it. It's called a distributed denial of service attack, and they just get a lot of computers all at once to go to the website. And a website is a public website. It can't deny traffic, incoming traffic. And since the incoming address changes, is rotated, you can't say, well, don't bug me from this address. So you're kind of out of luck as far as I can tell. Wait a minute, Joe, who's an expert. He's an expert here. Joe Talbot is here from Telos. He knows his phone stuff. He says if you had an auto attendant that required somebody calling to press a key, that would at least stop the robo-dialers, right?
Yeah, which is most of those.
Yeah, most of them are robotic. Hold on for an important announcement. You've just won a cruise. So that's a good idea. That's one thing you could do. And you could do that with Ring Central, certainly. What you say is, hey, thank you for calling my fine business. To speak to an attendant, press 1. To speak to Joe, press 2. To, you know, and like that kind of thing. That would work. That would work for a lot of them because they are auto dialers. Boy, I you know, Jeff, you have my sympathy. It's the bane. It's just a nightmare. The problem is blocking individual numbers isn't going to work because they don't use the same number. They change numbers all the time. Raven says he's done that too. He put an attendant on his phone. And, you know, press 1 to speak to Raven. And after that, boop, they go away. I do get a few. I have that as well. But I do get a few, quite a few messages. Press 1, you know, where I'm hearing my own announcement back to me. I'm not sure why. Don't use 1 or 0, says Cap'n. Use an unusual number. Yeah. Press 27 if you want to talk to me. That's, you know what that's like? That's like those CAPTCHAs they put on websites. Prove you're a human. And, of course, a human can't figure it out at all. What is it? G, C, press 763 for an attendant. That would work. There's a good idea, Jeff. That's probably the best bet. It sounds like a number of people in the chat room have done that. Let's go to Cucamonga, California. Angelo. Hi, Angelo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm fine. I've been listening for so long, and I must say I'm really grateful for you.
Well, I'm grateful to get to do this. This is not working for a living, I can tell you that. This is a great job.
Well, I'm calling you as a last resort because I have a problem that it seems like it's very challenging for a lot of the tech repair places in my area, so I don't know where to go.
Okay, let me help you.
My laptop, I've had it 3 years old. It's an Acer, and I really like it. I'm comfortable with it, but when I got it, when I first got it, maybe every few months it would do the blue screen of death. It wasn't a big deal. But now it does it every about 60 to 75 minutes.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I've upgraded it to Windows 7.
Yeah, no, it's probably hardware.
Well, I took it to some techs. They checked the RAM. They do all this stuff. And they said, short of replacing the motherboard, we don't know. And
right, because it's intermittent. So, the fact that it started and then it got worse and worse, on a modern operating system, blue screens of death only happen if a driver is renegade or if the hardware is bad, because programs can't really blue screen a computer anymore. So Oh, hang on. We're going to take a break, but I'll talk about what you might do right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This kind of crash. It means Windows is telling you, I can't go on. Things have gotten so bad in here that I'm just giving up. And then they give you information as if that would be of any use, and it's not. The only person that you know, that dump that they do, that screen dump of all the, you know, they show you what the memory looked like, what the last instruction was, and so on and so forth. It's really only useful to a programmer. That's debugging information that only somebody who's a programmer really would be able to use. And it's often useless anyway, because by the time the computer's crashed, it's probably executing other code. So the error messages in the blue screen of death are virtually useless. That's a really good example of a company giving you way too much information. Now Apple, it goes the other direction. When an Apple crashes, it just... Actually, the kernel panic, which is their version of the blue screen of death, is pretty straightforward. It gives it to you in 20 different languages, and it all says the same thing. I can't go on. Please reboot. Something extraordinarily bad has happened. And then I think they have a little Mac with crossed eyes or something. No information at all. But that's probably fine, because that information you're getting, it gives you a false sense of hope. There's nothing you could do with that. The information that you've got is this. You got such a serious crash that Windows couldn't recover. No program can do that. You can only do that if you can access system memory, ring zero memory. That means a driver. More often it means a hardware error. So a couple of things to look at, Angelo. I'm glad you brought it into a shop. I don't know how smart they were. You look at the power supply, for one. That's one area where something can go bad. The power supply, if it is marginal, sometimes will give you a marginal power and can cause those blue screens of death. And the fact that it was started, happening every few days, then it got more common, it sounds like something is not dead, but dying. Power supply. That's an analog device that does, in fact, get wonky. Could be overheating as well. A lot of computers don't like it when it gets so hot and they'll just shut down. Usually they don't give you a blue screen of death, but they could. So they checked the memory. That was one thing to check. But there's other things. I would make sure that your cooling is working. I would monitor after a shutdown like that, take a look at the temperature. Monitor the temperature during the operation if you can. Things like that. Those are things to look for. They're right that it may well be. There's nothing you can do about it. But it's worth trying to find out. And I'll tell you, replacing a power supply is cheap. So you might even just try that. $40. Might even just try that. Make sure the fans are working. The fan, especially on the CPU, is working. There's software to monitor your motherboard temperature, your case temperature. I would get that and run it and keep an eye on that temperature. If it goes up suddenly, then you know. Drivers are always a potential cause, so it's not a bad idea to look at your drivers. But the fact that it had been happening a lot and then happens even more, that sounds to me like a failing hardware component. Is it Evan or Yvonne in California? Hi, Yvonne.
Hi. I'm a screensaver, call for help. Been watching you forever. Matter of fact, we had tickets to come up and be in the audience, and then I got sick and we didn't make the trip up there.
Yvonne, I'm so thrilled to talk to you. These are the old TV shows I did back in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Oh, we used to love it. I actually have... two, and I hope they're really fast questions for you. But one question is, I have, I do embroider designs, and I'm using Windows XP, and I don't want to get another computer, but mine's kind of getting like I need to. I'm afraid of losing my program, and it wouldn't work on one of the newer computers. But then somebody said maybe if I got like Windows 7 Pro.
Yeah, I wouldn't go past Windows 7. It's Windows 8, the jury's still out. A lot of people really hate it. What is the name of your program?
PE Design.
P as in Paul, E Design?
Yeah.
So I would go to the website it goes with the Brother sewing machine.
Right.
Ah, so that is a potential problem because, of course, Brother has to keep the software up to date. Let me just look.
And on the new one, I don't want to purchase new ones because they're a couple $1,000, you know. So, and then I also have artistic And I have, you know, about three of them. So, you know, I'm looking at several, you know, the computer to replace all of them.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. What about your computer is going wonky?
Well, it's just Windows XP. I've had it for 6 years. And just it started making a little bit of noises. I mean, I'm going to hang on to it as long as I can.
Well, I got to tell you that a new operating system's not going to fix the noises.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably hard drives starting to fail, things like that.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
I think what you want to do is keep that computer running as best you can.
Okay.
Especially if it runs PE Design fine, which I bet it does.
I have Photoshop. I have PaintShop Pro.
Oh, is that
and
cool?
All of those. All of them. You know,
so you import you import an image via a scanner, or do you hand draw it? How do you do your embroidery?
You know, I do a little bit of each, but like right now what I'm doing is I'll change one into a vector, and from a vector I can put it in the program, and then it'll automatically
right.
do it.
Isn't that cool?
And then you
push a button, and the brother just goes...
Yeah, then I put it on a... Well, the brother that I have is an older one, so I have to, with a floppy dish, I put it into the machine. And
the machine takes a floppy. That's so cool. Yeah, you know, and if you bought a new computer, it wouldn't have a floppy drive. And
right.
Yeah. So what you want to do is keep that old XP machine going as best it can. Now, if it's a hard drive starting to fail, that's not a big deal. But make sure you're backing up.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you got all the disks for, you know, PE Design and your Windows disk and all that, so that if the drive does fail, you put a new one in. New drives are not expensive.
Right.
And in fact, it might not be a bad idea right now to go to the store, get a new drive, or order one online.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then back up your existing drive to the new one. Just swap it out.
Okay.
The trick is going to be on this older computer, it's not going to be one of the newer drive types, this what they call SATA, SATA drives. Mm-hmm. It's probably an IDE drive, and it's a little hard to find those. But you should be able to do so, especially if you have a good little computer store in the area. 6 years old, I'm not sure. It might be SATA. I'm not sure.
Okay.
You're going to have to get somebody's help on that one. But I think okay. There's no reason, if it's working fine, it's just a little noisy, there's no reason to get rid of this thing.
Okay.
You know, the only time an old computer isn't a good fit is when you're trying to use new software. So I wouldn't try to go to a Windows 7 at this point. I'd probably stick with Windows XP.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And can I ask you another question real quick?
Sure.
I have a Galaxy 3, and I dearly love it. The one thing I don't like, is there an app or is there a way?
Hold on a second. We're going to take a break for news. I'll find you an app. Don't worry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And we're talking about computers and the internet. Cell phones and camcorders, home theater, photography in just a bit, 33 and a third after the hour. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, will do a little photographic myth busting. I'm also going to ask him if there will be any digital camera announcements at CES. I imagine so. It's not traditionally a big camera show, but I imagine that there will be some interesting announcements there. Mostly it'll be TVs, I think. TVs are going to be the big story at the Consumer Electronics Show, which... starts tonight. The official conference begins on Tuesday. That's when the exhibition floor opens, but the events start tonight. We have some people out there. Father Robert Ballister will be covering the event. Now, we were talking, and one of the things I want to see at the Consumer Electronics Show when I head out there is this kind of or what they call an urban weather station. It's called NetAtmo, and the idea is it measures not only the usual stuff, humidity, wind, barometric pressure, temperature, it also measures the air quality, which is kind of cool. And I guess our chatter Dr. Mom has one of those. What's the air quality like right now in Little Neck, Long Island, or Great Neck, Long Island, Dr. Mom? Is it good? I think that's kind of an interesting idea. You put it outside, and it'll tell you how much CO2 is in the air, you know, how brown the air is. Neat idea. But I think the big show story, of course, will be these new TVs from Samsung. LG will be showing its OLED display, which they're putting on on sale in Japan in a few months. And maybe there'll be other stuff. 4K TVs will be the big story, I suspect. Just as it was 3 years ago, 3D was the big story. 3D TVs. And we all reacted with kind of a collective, So they went back to the drawing board and said, what else can we do? We need to get something to get people to buy new TVs. And I think that the 4K might be compelling. They're expensive right now, but they'll get cheaper. They'll get less expensive. Anyway, I'm heading out after the show tonight. Should be interesting. We were talking before the break with Yvonne in California. She says she has, what was it, a Galaxy S3?
I do, and I would love to find an app, or maybe I just haven't found it on the phone, but when I'm on the phone, I'm a phone cradler. I'm always doing something with my hands, and yeah. I'm forever muting the phone, cutting them off.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it?
It is, and then you can't get back to them.
Right.
For some reason, I can't get back to them, and then I call my, and I go, oh, it must be your phone.
In theory, the S3, like the iPhone and most other modern smartphones, when you're holding it to your ear, it's supposed to blank the screen, so you can't accidentally do that.
But that doesn't work because I'm always, yeah.
It may be because you're using your shoulder to hold it. I don't know. I've had that problem with an iPhone as well, and I have the opposite problem with my Galaxy Note 2. I'll be on the phone, and it'll say, press 1 for an operator, and I try to press 1, and every time I try to touch it, the screen goes off, and I can't tap 1. It sounds like you're having that problem, too, that the screen is blank as soon as you try to put it to take it off of hold.
Well, yeah, and you try and get back there, and you can't push any buttons.
How frustrating is that?
It is.
Do you have a screen cover or some sort of a case on your phone? Because sometimes that can block the proximity sensor that's supposed to handle this.
Yeah, I do.
It could be that. If you can remove it easily just to see, it could be that. These phones have effectively little sensors that are almost like cameras that let you know. You probably could see it, the dots at the top of the S3. They let you know if you're holding the phone up, let the phone know if you're holding it up to your ear, and they blank the screen so that no controls can be tapped. And then if you move it away, the screen comes back on. It could be that those are being blocked.
Okay. Yeah, I tried using my first one without a cover on it, and I dropped and broke it, shattered it. So
I know. Did you have the problem when you didn't have the cover?
I don't know. I don't even remember because I just had it and didn't have the cover on, and I was using it, and I was outside, and I don't know what I did, but it just, I had it in my pocket, and it slipped out of it. You know, I had like a sweatshirt on.
I think it's time for you to get a hands-free unit, whether it's corded or Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to put the phone to your ear. You know, I have to do that because putting a Galaxy Note to your ear, you look like you're holding a Hershey bar up to your ear. It's gigantic. Yeah, So,
do you like the Galaxy Note?
I love it. But I've got big sausage fingers, and so I need a keyboard, the biggest keyboard I can get. And this one is, even with this one, I still make a lot of mistakes. But, and I like, you know, I mostly use my phone as a computer, so a big screen for me is an asset. But
I've been using mine a lot.
Yeah, well, the S3 is a great, that's a great screen. So a couple of things you can do. Of course, the phone came with earbuds that have a microphone on it. You might just see if that's all right for you. Wired always works a little bit better in terms of sound quality and reliability. But there are a lot of good Bluetooth earpieces you can put in as well. And then you won't have that issue. You can just put the phone down. You don't have to crate. It's bad. You know, your chiropractor will tell you it's not a good idea to hold the phone with your shoulder anyway.
Yeah,
you're gonna. I don't know what kind of damage that's gonna cause. So I would try. You probably still have the earbuds the phone came with. Why don't you try that?
I do.
Yeah.
Okay. I will. I'm gonna give that a try.
All right, Yvonne. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for.
It was good talking to you. And keep up the good work. You know, one thing I love about you is I've listened to some other talk shows, and you always let the people talk. You don't cut them off and just keep talking. You know, you kind of make sure you've answered your questions. And sometimes when you listen to these other shows, they answer a question, but they really don't answer the question. I don't know how to explain it.
I know what you mean. And sometimes people get mad at me for letting people talk too much, too. So it goes both ways.
It's great.
Thanks, Yvonne. Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye. Yeah, the thing to remember is a talk show, it's an interesting, you know, it's really showbiz here. We're you know, people who are talk show hosts are putting together an entertainment. And it's really intended for the listeners, not the caller. The caller is merely a foil, an excuse. So, you know, I'm a little bit different. We're not here debating politics or anything. We're trying to help people use technology. So it's a little bit different. But I don't think, I don't really hold it against these very accomplished talk show hosts. They're doing a show. You know, it's their show. It's not a conversation. I think that's kind of a common misconception. There's a conversation going on. You are a foil for them. And, you know, there's all sorts of tricks we talk show hosts use. One of them is the phone system. I don't know if you've noticed this, but you can set the call system in such a way that if I start to speak loudly, it completely cuts off the caller. And a lot of hosts like that. It's called gating. Turn that gate up so that they can talk over any caller. That really isn't a conversation. I don't want to spoil the magic. You're right. Spring Rummer in our chat room says, you're spoiling the magic. Yes, that's right. I'll be kicked out of the Magicians Union if I say any more. Patrick in San Bernardino, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I'm working on some mobile learning solutions as a part of a master's degree.
Mm.
And one of the tools that I've been using is the sharing that's available on Macs.
Yes.
So, like the sharing of the screens, the printers, the files, and
yeah. So that way, a student can, you can show them how to do something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, what I'm wondering though is, like, in this current project, we were looking at some hardware that wasn't a Mac. We're going to have to use Windows.
Oh, it has sharing too.
So it does.
Oh, absolutely. Nowadays, every computer does. I'll talk a little bit about different ways you can do screen sharing in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. We're talking tech. And website is techguylabs.com. Let me see who's been holding on here. How about Denise in Valencia, California? Hi, Denise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, wait a minute. Before I get to you, Denise, I wanted to wrap up Patrick. That's it. We were talking to Patrick. He wanted to remote access PCs. He's been doing it with Macs, using the remote desktop on the Macintosh. PCs also have remote desktop, Patrick.
Thank you, Leo. I was just about to be really sad right now.
I know. I apologize. I almost forgot.
All right. It's okay. Is it something that's within the operating system itself?
Yeah. You know, Microsoft's is built in just as Apple's is, but there are also, there's other solutions. VNC is kind of the traditional. So there's RDP for Microsoft Windows. That's built in, remote desktop. Then there's a lot of other choices. TeamViewer is one that's people love. Of course, we have our sponsor does GoToMyPC, which allows you to do it anywhere, even online. So there are a lot of different choices. I would take a look at the Windows product because it's already built in. But if that doesn't do what you need, try TeamViewer. A lot of people recommend that. That's Windows, Mac, Linux, even works with tablets. And then, of course, our sponsor makes the kind of the creme de la creme. Let's go to my PC. Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for calling, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. I'm glad you're doing that. That sounds like a great project. Now Denise in Valencia. Sorry, Denise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Hey, hi. I was one of your first callers yesterday about my Mac Mini USB connection fluctuating.
Yeah.
In my power.
Yeah.
And I forgot to add an important stack info that I didn't tell you yesterday. Due to the USB ports on the circuit board fluctuating, my Mac Mini would shut down after a couple of days. And then I would get a dialog box that would say the Mac had to shut down and had to restart. And I looked up more on the info of the dialog box, and it said it shut down because of a kernel error. And that's why it had to shut down on its own. So when I brought in my Mac Mini to the Apple store to troubleshoot my three-year-old Mac Mini, they did it in test or detest and a load on my hard drive and circuit board and said that my hard drive was fine, but my USB connection on the circuit board was starting to fail. And so to fix that, I would need to replace the circuit board, and that would be like $400 total for both parts and labor to fix this. And you only get a 90-day warranty after that. So my question to you is, should I repair my three-year-old Mac Mini at $400 with only a 90-day warranty, or buy a new Mac Mini for $200 more with a one-year additional warranty?
Well, I can't, again, same answer I gave you yesterday, which is I can't answer this because I don't have access to it. So I can't give you an intelligent answer. I don't think as I said yesterday, the Apple genius gave you good advice. He sold you another computer. No such thing as a USB connection starting to fail. What does that mean, starting to fail? I don't understand. It either works or it doesn't work. There's no starting to fail on digital equipment. There's starting to fail on a hard drive. It might start being wonky. But you can't. A circuit board doesn't start to fail. It's either working or it's not working. So whatever they told you, as soon as he says that, is garbage. It doesn't make any sense. Starting to fail. Is it work or doesn't work? My concern, as I mentioned to you yesterday, is that you're trying to run five drives off of it. I would say that if you can, I would try not to run five drives off a USB port. It's too much power. So, but I can't give you a definitive answer because I don't have the hardware and I can't tell you what's wrong. I don't even know what they mean by your USB port is starting to fail. I don't know what that means. I think the data bus is overloaded by using five drives. Don't use five drives. Try that for a few days. See if that works. If it works, then you don't need a new Mac. I don't think you need a new Mac. I think the genius is giving you strange advice. But again, he had access to it, and I don't. So maybe when he told you starting to fail, maybe that's his way of saying something else. I don't know what. It doesn't make any sense. on the other hand, you're using it for work. It's important to you. I don't think, frankly, a Mac Mini is a good choice for a production computer. You should probably get a Mac Pro or an iMac, which is a little heavier, more heavy duty. I would consolidate your five drives into a single USB drive. And I would, if you're going to get a new computer, get a better one than a Mac Mini. A Mac Mini is really mostly Apple's way of trying to give people a sub-$1,000 Macintosh. It's not ideal. If you really need five drives, get a Mac Pro and put five drives internally. It can handle that, no problem. Getting another Mac Mini is not going to solve the problem. Going to OneDrive should solve the problem. But on the other hand, this is a computer you spend some time with. Buying a new one isn't that expensive. It might be a good idea. I'm not happy with the advice you're getting, though. Michelle in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, hi, Leo. Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Okay, I have taken to using Skype instead of a landline, which I really love doing.
Yeah, I know. It's great. Are you using it now?
No. No, I'm not. I only use it in my office,
okay.
And I'm not in my office right now.
Okay.
And I'm paying for a monthly fee so I can call anywhere in the United States. My problem is I'm getting a lot of complaints about the quality at the other end. I can hear people. It's absolutely fabulous because I've got my speakers on. But I would say about 50% of the time they complain about the background noise and the quality and everything.
Okay, a couple of things that will make Skype sound better. First of all, bandwidth is everything. So what they may be complaining about is just that your bandwidth has fluctuated and you don't sound so great anymore. It's hard to tell with Skype. But tell me, are you using a headset or are you using the laptop microphone?
I'm neither.
What are you using?
I'm on a desktop. I am using a video camera with its own built-in microphone, and it's a USB connection.
Are you wearing headphones?
No, and I really don't want to.
Okay, that's number one, is you have to.
Oh, darn. Okay.
So here's what Skype does. When it will try to automatically, it calls it echo cancellation, because most people don't want to wear headphones. But the problem is, if you think about it, your caller's voice is coming back through the microphone out to them. So Skype's doing the best it can to prevent that. And it's just a mess. Let me talk about how to do Skype best when we come back. Kodachrome means it's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Now, we were talking, Chris, with Michelle in Los Angeles, who calls overseas from her office using Skype. And Michelle says, hey, my people I'm calling say I sound terrible or I'm breaking up and so forth. Step one, I think, is to use headphones. Chris, you see, is using headphones, Michelle. I'm using headphones. And the reason is when you're on a Skype call and you're using the speakers, the sound from the speaker is going right back into that microphone. So Skype has to work hard to turn that off. That's called echo cancellation. And it often causes problems, including noise in the background. You'll also get better results if you use a microphone as opposed to that distant microphone on the camera. So what I would suggest, Michelle, and it's not expensive, is go out and get a USB headset.
Okay.
My recommendation is the Plantronics Dot Audio 655. It's about $30. I know you don't want to wear headphones. It's not too bad. It's pretty lightweight. I think it's a single ear, and it puts a microphone close to your mouth. If the problem is not bandwidth, that will fix it. If it's bandwidth, then there's another, you know, then you have to just get more bandwidth. And the problem with using it at the office, your office probably does have a ton of bandwidth, but there's also a ton of people using it. So it probably fluctuates quite a bit. What we've found, we use Skype all the time. I'm using it right now with Chris. And what we found is it works best when you're at home using it and you're the only one and the only program using bandwidth. The more bandwidth you give Skype, the better it'll sound. If you're at the office, I bet it works better in the evening than it does in midday. You know, people are downloading a lot of stuff, using a lot of bandwidth. We actually had to change things here at the studio. We had a bunch of drop cams, these spy cams all over the place, five or six, and each of them was sending out using 2 megabits of bandwidth. So the drop cams were killing our internet access. So we finally put them on their own network because Skype stopped working. I remember I was doing an interview via Skype, and I, unbeknownst to me, my email program decided to go out and get a bunch of email. And all of a sudden, the signal went just way downhill. So you can't predict how people are going to be using that bandwidth at the offices. Even though you have a ton of bandwidth, it might be congested nevertheless. Try the headsets. They're $28.23 on Amazon. I know you don't want to wear headphones because you have a nice hairdo and it's going to ruin it. I have headphone hair every day. Sorry, Michelle.
All right. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Give it a try, though. I think it will make a difference. In fact, you'll be amazed how good it sounds. Chris Marquardt actually is here. He is, first of all, he's calling from Germany. So that just shows you how good Skype can be. I mean, you sound like you're next to me.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it can really work. And I make sure to switch everything off here so there's nothing on the network apart from me.
And it's the middle of the night.
It's the middle of the night. And neighbors are probably surfing right now, so there's probably some interference from that. But it's okay. It's decent enough.
Yeah, we get great. And not only are you sending audio, and it's wonderful audio, but we get a video picture of you. Now, you're doing some other things that make it extra good. You're using headphones. That means my voice isn't coming back in through the microphone. And you're using a pro mic. True.
That helps, yeah, but it's not necessary. I mean, the headset thing is probably going to be plenty good for just regular
calls. Get you 90% of the way. So Chris is here every week to talk about digital photography. He is a professional photographer and an expert in digital photography, one of the early users of digital cameras. And he's been doing some photographic myth-busting for us. And after we do the myth-busting, I do want to ask you about if there are any rumors or anything at CES I should be paying attention to.
Absolutely.
What do you want to talk about today?
Well, the myth I wanted to bring up briefly is that rainy days are bad photography days.
Yeah, you want bright sun, don't you?
Right, yeah, man, you want it in your back, right?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily, because when it's rainy outside, and the weather here is just perfect for that, because we've had such a few rainy days over the last 3-4 days. It's been raining constantly almost. And what do? You stay home? Not necessarily, because the light is very special, actually. It's very diffuse, so that's very easy for your camera to handle. You'll see things that you won't normally see, like fast people, umbrellas, clouds. Dramatic clouds are really interesting to photograph. Actually, I put up a few pictures online for you at tfttf.com/therain. Just a little gallery of some rain pictures to give you some illustration for those who watch.
tfttf.com/therain. TFTTF is tips from the top floor.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the things you can do if you have let's say Lightroom or Aperture, do some post processing on these pictures and raise the contrast in the sky. So all of a sudden these clouds that look kind of dull, all of a sudden will go boom and be very dramatic, and you have very, very, very ominous clouds up there. Obviously, what you can shoot is reflections.
I love reflections in photography. I don't know why.
Absolutely. Yeah. Water just adds this whole new dimension. Raindrops, the structures come out very differently. And you're probably one of the few people out shooting, which is an advantage. So
yeah, no competition. No competition. But what about your gear? Should I worry? How do you protect your gear in the rain?
Well, there is a bit of protection. First of all, check the manual of your camera. Many of the higher-end DSLRs will actually take some rain. Nikons are good at that. Pentax cameras are especially good at that. What I typically try to do at least is to keep the front element of my lens clean of rain, so there's no water drops in the picture. A lens hood does a good job there. And then if it's really too rainy, there's professional rain protection you can buy, but there's also the simple plastic bag, like a Ziploc type bag, you know? And if you cut a hole in the bottom, you stick the lens through that hole and put a rubber band around it, you can shoot this way. I've been doing that in a pinch and it works really well. So I'm not too worried about my camera. I try not to really soak it, but if there's some rain on it, I wipe it off with my sleeve and it's usually good.
A lot of cameras are actually designed to handle a little bit of moisture.
Yeah, again, check the specs, check the manual.
You don't need an underwater camera to do it.
No, and a bit of rain, again, you can wipe it off. If you don't leave it out in the rain too long, it's probably good. Or you have an umbrella, a little point and shoot in one hand, umbrella in the other hand. That'll give you some opportunities there.
So CES is coming. I'm flying out tonight. You're not going to go to the Consumer Electronics Show.
I wish I was this time, but it's too close to the change of year, so it didn't work for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
Photography-wise, traditionally CES is not a camera-centric trade show, and the big photo show, the Photokina in Germany, is only up every other year, and it was last year. So this year, I would expect this to be a bit of a slower year for cameras.
That's funny. They just wait for Photokina instead of going somewhere else. They wait every other year to do announcements.
I think you should buy the camera if you need one, and not right. Not
cameras aren't. they're not like computers where they get updated all the time.
At least I'm not looking at that, actually. But what I expect for CES to see more cameras that have Wi-Fi built in, more GPS in the cameras.
Yes.
Not a CES announcement, but Canon has the 6D out, which has both Wi-Fi and GPS, and it's just now starting to be shipped to people. Nikon's D600 is a very interesting camera. Again, not a CES announcement, but pre-CES, and now they're starting to be really available in larger numbers. Android has a camera out with Samsung has a camera out with the Android operating system.
I thought that
the Samsung
was kind of
Galaxy,
interesting. Yeah.
which came out in 2012. Now there's a rumor that Polaroid is actually going to release a digital camera with interchangeable lenses that will run on Android. Huh. So that's a rumor right now. So we might see a few things. I think mobile operating systems on cameras that will then allow you to run apps and have like filters and sharing built in and all these things, I think is going to be something that we'll probably see at CES.
Chris Marquardt does workshops. You can find out more about his workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com. You can also find his podcast there, Tips from the Top Floor. And we have a little assignment going, a chance to go out and take some pictures. You have a couple more weeks to take those pictures. What is the assignment this week?
Well, the current assignment is still holiday. And by the way, Renee, our moderator there, asked me to tell everyone that they also have little mini assignments every now and then, like free open mini assignments. So this is a very active group, and I highly recommend people checking out the Tech Guy group.
Rain is the subject of our photo guy assignment. If you want to participate, really, it's just an excuse to go out and take pictures. I have to go take pictures now. I've got to submit for the Chris Marquardt photo assignment. So take the picture. Can be with any kind of camera. A camera phone is fine. What we're going to do, though, is review those and pick three to talk about in a couple of weeks. So here's the deal. And by the way, as Chris said, there are mini assignments all the time. So you don't have to wait for the big monthly assignment. There's lots of excuses to take pictures. Join our photo, our tech guy group on Flickr. Flickr.com. That's a Yahoo site. So if you already have a Yahoo account, you've got a Flickr account. If not, make one. It's free. Then upload as many as one new photo every week with the tag Rain to submit to those assignments. And we'll look at all the rain pictures, quite a few already, and pick a few to talk about in a couple of weeks on the show. Flickr group is Tech Guy. It's the Tech Guy group on Flickr. Free to do it. Free to join. Manny is in North Kingston, Rhode Island. Hi, Manny. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
How are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I wanted to thank you for the great job you're doing on the air for everyone of us people that kind of have problems with computers.
Yeah, I hear all the problems.
Mine, what I'm trying to do is prevent something from happening. I have some laptops and desktops that have an SSD, and I wanted to image, from what I understand, image the drive. One of them is going to be a Windows 7 computer desktop, and it's going to be here Wednesday. So I want, before my son starts smunking with it too much, I want to save an image of it. He's going to be using it for gaming.
How old is your son?
He's 16.
Oh, yeah. He can get you in a lot of trouble. Yeah. No, that's a good idea. Anytime you've got kids using computers, keeping an image, a clean, pristine, easy-to-restore image is so handy. Because if you get a virus, all you have to do is restore the image and you're back, you're golden.
I've been reading about the Windows 7, I don't know if they call it cloning or the DVD function on that, but is that the best solution for that?
You're getting Windows 7, not Windows 8?
Right, because I've heard Windows 8, as far as, you know, gaming and all that, they've got a little bit to catch up on.
You know, Windows 8 is basically Windows 7 in terms, if you're using it for gaming.
Okay.
It's the UI that makes people crazy. And I do think it was Windows 8 that had the built-in restoring feature, which was which is a really cool feature. It might be a compelling reason to get Windows 8 is because it has this imaging built into it. Windows 7, not so much. Microsoft used to make a product called Steady State, which was a really neat idea for exactly this purpose. It was also used at hotels, libraries, anywhere a computer was used in public. Steady State would allow you to just kind of reboot and get go back to the original status, which is awesome. There is a commercial program called from Faronics, Faronics.com, called, I can't remember the name, Deep Freeze, that's right. And it does the same thing. But I don't think it's, let me see how expensive it is. It might be not worthwhile for this particular purpose.
Now, since the since it's an SSD, I was thinking that I could just save the operating system onto like a 32 or 64 gig thumb drive.
Yes.
That's not really an option.
Absolutely. And that's a completely good option. And there are a number of programs that will let you do this. Clonezilla is free. It's open source. Actually, you know what? Deep Freeze is not expensive. 1 year is $35. That's okay. Not bad. Clonezilla is free, though, which is kind of nice. There are EaseUS at EaseUS.com also makes a imaging program. So what you'll be doing is when you get this new computer, first thing I would do, by the way, is update it. You know, run all the Windows updates. Install any software you know you're going to want. If your son's a gamer, Steam, whatever you know you're going to want, and then make an image. And the reason is you'll have less to do when you restore that image.
Right.
And you can keep that image on an external drive, external thumb drive, if it fits. If you have it I often put a second drive inside, if it's a desktop, inside the computer. and have it blast it to the second drive. Very makes it very quick and easy. Okay. There are a number of, you know, the person you get the hard drive from, Western Digital, for instance, has a program that'll do that. I haven't used the Windows 7 restore feature. I know Windows 8 is really cool. It basically, you can reset the system, which I think is a great idea. But I haven't used the Windows 7, so I'm not sure. I noticed that people generally pick a third-party product, so I'm guessing that's probably a better way to go.
Now, on thumb drives, this has happened to me in the past where I try to download something that's more than 4 gigs on, let's say, you know, 8-gig thumb drive. It won't
that's
let
the,
me.
That's the file system won't let you do that because FAT32 can't handle more than 4 gigs. So it's not a question of capacity. It's a question of the maximum file size.
Okay, so if I reformat the thumb drive...
NTFS is fine. That'll handle massive files.
Okay.
And most of these drive image programs understand that, and they'll just separate their image into 4-gig, you know, separate 4-gig files, multiple 4-gig files. They'll span it.
If I was to basically transfer the or copy the hard drive that's on there, once we get everything on, right onto a thumb drive... Would I even need any? Would that be kind of just copying?
You can't just copy it. That's why you need an imaging utility. You need because it won't copy the hidden files. It won't copy the system files. What you want to do is make a kind of a freeze-dried duplicate of it that you can quickly restore.
Okay.
And there's so many ways to do this. It's interesting. The interest in this has gone up a lot. It makes a lot of sense. I like the deep freeze product because it's a little more straightforward. It just kind of restores it. And Windows 8 has the same thing. It just resets everything to its original state. But presuming you don't want to do that all the time, that your son won't screw up the computer more than once every few months, it's probably a good idea. You don't need to do that. A simple image of the original drive is great. Much faster than reinstalling Windows.
Right. If you have time for the same follow-on question, we have two MacBook Airs, and one is my daughter's. She's got it for Christmas, so it's a month old, so she would be primed for that. But mine is like a year and a half old, so do I want to copy what I have on mine that's already a year and a half old?
What I do with the Macs is a little different. I use a program called Super Duper, which I highly recommend. And it actually will make a bootable backup. So what you can do with your Super Duper is run connect an external drive and run Super Duper on a schedule, and it will make sure that you have effectively a duplicate drive. If the internal one dies, you just boot to the external one. Apple's make that very easy. Just hold down the Option key during boot. And you'll now be able to get right back to work because it's all along been updating it. So it's a little different than an image. Problem with an image, it's frozen in time. It's a fly stuck in amber.
Okay.
And you have to go back to that time. Super Duper keeps it up to date. Not such a big deal on the Macintosh side because we don't have the same issues with malware and kind of bit rot that Windows seems to have.
Okay. And would that Super Duper work with we have a ReadyNAS.
It works great with ReadyNAS.
Okay.
Any drive that's mountable, it'll work fine with.
Okay.
Yeah, I that's what I do basically on the Macintosh side. They have imaging software, but for some reason I associate imaging, maybe because it started with Norton Ghost, with Windows and something like Super Duper, which is a bootable updated backup. A bootable backup is a great thing to have. I really like it. Super Duper for Mac. On the Windows side, Clonezilla is good. Actually, that'll work with Macs too. It's open source software. Drivesnapshot.de. EaseUS is free. There's lots of good choices. And yeah, you probably could use the built-in imaging software on Windows 7. I just have never used it, and I notice nobody else seems to. So that I figure there must be a reason. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, Hour 3 of the Tech Guy program, as we continue to solve people's tech problems, help them with a little hand-holding on the information superhighway, teach them how to use, abuse, choose, and lose their objects of desire, their digital devices. That's what we do on the show every weekend, and I hope you'll give me a ring if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 888 888- 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you can use Skype to call. Our website is techguylabs.com. And you don't have to write anything down. If you hear it on the show, James DeRuvo will notate it on the website. Josh Windisch will post video after the show of the question and my answer. And I hope you, if you have a thought about my answer, will add your 2 cents in the comments on the blog. We encourage you to do that because I would love this to become a great repository of questions and answers and information about how to use technology better. And with your help, I think it could be. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number to ask a question. To help answer, techguylabs.com. Let's go to Springfield, Missouri. Bruce is on the line. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. Thanks for the opportunity to be a foil for you. I wanted to tell you, I think I made a bad mistake yesterday, but I don't know any other thing I could have done. And let me tell you a sad story. I had about a six-year-old Vista box that I used for my businesses and all kinds of things, and it finally died on me. And so I thought, okay, I'll go down to the last big box we have here in town and see what they have. And they had a pretty good price on, you know, a much more powerful computer, and didn't know really too much about what I was getting into when I found out, you know, I've got Windows 8 now.
Yeah, pretty much almost it's almost difficult not to get Windows 8. You have to make an effort to get Windows 7 these days.
Well, here's the issue. Now, you know, I spent a half an hour trying to figure out how to get into control panel, but I think with three clicks I could have booked a flight to Disney World.
It's just crazy.
So I've got a printer that I use for, it's a laser printer I use for printing out barcoded packing slips that I need to have access to, and they don't have the driver for Windows 8 yet. I've got a laser cutter that their latest driver is Windows 7, and now I'm kind of out of business. So,
have you tried using the driver with Windows 8? Because I don't think they changed the driver model.
You know, I plugged it. It was USB, and I plugged it in. It won't even see it.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's a mess. So here's my question. I think the failure on my previous machine was not the hard drive. So, do you think it would be possible to pull that hard drive out and have somebody install it in my new box?
Yeah.
Perhaps be able to boot to that.
It's a little tricky because the hard drive, the Windows Vista installation is all set up for the hardware on that old system. And so a couple of things are going to happen. First of all, some hardware won't work. I mean, like motherboard hardware, stuff like that, you know, deep down. You're also, almost certainly, Microsoft will ding you and say, wait a minute, this isn't the same machine. And you got to re-register Windows. So it's not trivial. You might be able to get it working.
Okay.
But it's not trivial. You're going backwards. Now, one thing I would do is try, if you can, to get used to Windows 8. It may take a couple of weeks to kind of get used to. Even Microsoft is saying this now.
Yeah.
That there is about 2 week, I think that's what Julie Larson Green said, about a 2 week kind of, because you're right. I mean, things like the control panel, you're used to hitting the start button, and there it is, control panel, and you go into it. Now you got to swipe in from the right on the charms menu or hit Windows key charms, and then you have to go to settings for the PC, and then,
yeah,
and
it's all very fantastical. I'm sure it's quite lovely.
Well, and there's even two different control panels. I mean, it's very, frankly, I think Microsoft blew it badly. I've been really resistant to saying that because I want to give them a chance. I admire the fact that they were willing to kind of take a look and start over. But I'm hearing from so much pain from so many people.
If I could bottle the frustration I've had in the last 24 hours and send it to them, it wouldn't smell good when they open it.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you.
I imagine I'm going to be able to get used to it. But, you know, I've been a Microsoft user since Windows 3.1.
Well, but then you remember that when you go to a new version of the operating system, there often are these driver issues.
But to make something that is so totally foreign to what you've come.
Well, I agree. There's some question there. And so here's the I feel for Microsoft. I understand the choice they had to make. They had the option of, look, we'll make incremental improvements. Windows 7, by the way, much better than Vista. Windows 7's great. Stick with the Windows 7 user interface, the Windows 7 way of doing things, make incremental improvements, and kind of just coast. And so that was option one. We're just going to coast as a company. And, of course, you know what happens in tech to companies that coast is eventually they become less and less relevant, and they fade away. The other option was to take a big chance. And this is what they decided. We're going to, they even said this, we're reimagining windows. We're going to start over. We're throwing everything out the window. I don't think they actually did. In fact, if there's a problem with Windows 8, it's that it's still too much like Windows 7. If you're going to throw the baby out, throw it out the bathwater too. You got to get rid of it all and start over. It's risky. But it is a way to move forward. They recognized, for instance, that touch was going to be extremely important. So they said, look, the only way we can make touch work on Windows is to start from scratch. Because we tried. They've been trying since Windows XP. I have a Windows XP laptop in front of me that has touch. It's just grafted on top of it. It doesn't work very well. They got to start from zero. They recognize that tablets are big. So we got to make an operating system that will work on tablets, phones, and desktops. You know, they had a real challenge. And I think they recognized that what they were about to do was highly risky. I think they're now perceiving the risk. And yet, here's some interesting things. The Department of Defense just signed a deal with Microsoft. The DOD is going to have 75% of its employees will be using Windows 8. That's a $600 million contract they just signed. So that's kind of a vote of confidence from the Department of Defense. You would think that would be the most conservative of government agencies.
So, well, I guess, I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and get used to
my
it.
I would say that. Don't try to go back to Vista. Vista's kind of history anyway.
Yeah.
Did you get a machine with touch?
No. I can see all the things that pop up that could be useful for touch, but no, I've got my old monitors, my same.
Here's what I would do. Don't go to Vista. Go to Windows 7.
Well, it's too late for me now. I'm going to have to live with this, but I guess...
You could go out. You could go to Newegg and buy a Windows 7 disk. It's about $100.
Oh, okay. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Blow out the hard drive.
Okay.
Use Windows 7. All those Vista drivers will work with Windows 7.
Oh, there's my answer then. Okay, that's what I was hoping.
And you'll say Windows 7. In fact, I think Windows 7 is the best version Windows ever made. I think Windows 7 is fantastic. Better than Vista.
Working. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's my prediction that what's going to happen is Microsoft is going to back down here a little bit and say, okay, and continue to sell Windows 7 for a while.
Okay.
Because I just think that there are too many businesses in particular. You know, a home user can take a little time, take 2 weeks, get used to it. Suffer a little bit. They can do that. Businesses, they're not going to do that.
Yeah, no. Well, like I said, I've got a couple of businesses on the side, and I got hardware that I
got
to...
You got work to do.
Yeah.
This is going to cost you if you take 2 weeks to understand your Windows.
Exactly.
So spend the money, go to Windows 7. Okay. Don't try to bring over that old hard drive, because you could attach it and have the data and the program. You know, you could have stuff there as a way of making that transition easy.
Yeah.
But I would wipe the drive and install Windows 7.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. I appreciate it.
Sure,
Leo.
Bruce. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for the call. It's interesting. I just watched a video from a guy, tech reporter, who had, when Windows XP came out, did an interesting experiment where he spent 30 days with Linux, Windows XP, and Mac OS, and wrote reviews saying, you know, here is how you get work done with these. And in those reviews, he was balanced, and he said, you know, basically they all work fine. He's just done one on Windows 8, and he says, I can't get anything done. This thing's terrible. I'm starting to hear more and more pain. I really am. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Can't touch this.
What time is it? It's hammer time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo. Talking about high tech, talking about Windows 8, my friend Paul Thurrott, who runs the super site for Windows blog, and is probably one of the best-known Windows-focused journalists. He's written Windows Secrets books for Windows Vista 7 and Windows 8. He's written the books for Windows Phone. And he has a very interesting article this week on the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, explaining Windows 8 PC sales over the holidays. It's time to stop denying that Windows 8 is off to a slow start. I mean, really slow start. He's quoting data from NPD, which says, in effect, despite the hype and hope around the launch of Windows 8, the new operating system did little to boost holiday sales or improve the year-long Windows notebook sales decline. NPD says Windows notebook holiday sales dropped 11%. It's just been down, down, down. Paul says you can blame the netbook. He says the Windows 7 numbers, Windows 7 was selling better in its first month than Windows 8, and all along better than Windows 8, about 20 million units a month over its three-year lifespan. He said the reason it sold so well, it was pumped up arbitrarily, artificially, by the netbook. Windows 7, says Paul Thurrott, was a lie. The 20 million sales figure was unfairly bolstered by the sales of low-cost PCs, primarily netbooks. And then the problem is now that netbooks, he says, didn't just rejuvenate the market as Windows 7 appeared. They also destroyed it from within. Consumers expect to pay next to nothing for a Windows PC, and they just refuse to buy more expensive Windows PCs. And to take advantage of Windows 8, you need a more expensive touch PC. So people are buying, will only buy cheap, junky computers and then say, oh, man, Windows 8's terrible on this because there's no touch. NPD concludes, quote, netbooks did an incalculable amount of damage to the PC market by driving average selling prices down at an unsustainable rate. Microsoft, of course, trying to reverse that trend with Windows 8 by making better computers. But the problem is nobody will buy them. They're too expensive. And then we have lots of people, like our last caller, who bought non-touch Windows 8 systems and then are baffled by use it. They say it doesn't even work. So Microsoft, as I said before the break, made a big bet, a bet which is not, at this point, turning out very well. My recommendation in general is if you have time and you're a computer enthusiast and you'd like to use the latest, greatest, try Windows 8. In fact, take a look at Microsoft's Surface tablet, the Surface RT. The couple of weeks, the Windows Surface Pro will come out. Give those a try. If, you know, you've got money to spend and you're an enthusiast and you just want to see the latest and greatest. But if you're trying to get work done, if you're in a business, if you're the Department of Defense, you shouldn't be buying Windows 8. You should be buying Windows 7. And I suspect that all the companies that have pulled Windows 7 off the market are going to be putting it back on the market real soon. When you go to Dell right now, you got to really work hard to get a Windows 7 machine. You're going to be getting a Windows 8 machine. That's going to change, I predict. In 3 months, there'll be as many Windows 7 machines available at Dell as there are Windows 8 machines. And who knows, a year from now, you may not be able to find Windows 8 machines. Annette in Tustin, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Annette.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
So I finally upgraded from my Motorola Razr flip phone to an iPhone 5.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. But I'm having trouble sending picture messages to anyone who doesn't have an iPhone. I can send them to iPhone users over iMessage, but to somebody using an Android, I can't send a picture.
You can't use iMessage. You have to use a technology called MMS to send.
Right, and I've tried to get those settings right on my iPhone, and I just don't seem to.
Oh, but you shouldn't have to do anything. It should just work.
Well, it doesn't.
First of all, don't use Message.
Okay.
Actually, I think you have to, don't you? There is no text messaging program, just Message.
Correct.
What the iPhone is supposed to do is observe if the person that you're sending it to is using an iPhone. If it is, it will use the Apple technology, the iMessages technology, to use, you know, data instead of text messaging, to use messages instead of SMS or MMS.
Right.
And then if it says, oh no, I could see they're on a Samsung phone, we'll just send this via MMS. Huh. It's supposed to just do that.
That's what it looks like it's trying to do. And
right.
I went to the T-Mobile store and they put in some proxy settings and APN networks. And
that's the problem.
That's the problem.
You're using an iPhone on T-Mobile.
Yes.
Yeah, there's your problem.
Okay.
So, of course, T-Mobile doesn't sell iPhones. They would love you to do what you're doing.
Right.
But you got to, you know, if you'd bought it at Verizon or AT&T and Sprint, they're already configured properly.
It would just work.
Yeah, it would just work. The trick is exactly what they were trying to fix there at the T-Mobile store, is you have to have the right APN settings so that it's using the proper... I think it's confusing Apple's iMessage, frankly. That's an interesting question. Is there anybody using T-Mobile with an iPhone 5 in the chat room who has been able to get MMS working? We do have a document from, thanks to Web9599 in the chat room, from T-Mobile on how to set an iPhone to work with T-Mobile. I'll put that in the show notes at techguylabs.com.
Yeah, I used that document and did exactly what they said.
Yeah, that's the APN settings we were just talking about.
Yeah. All
that. Now, and the other thing is you have to make sure your friends have signed up for MMS.
Yeah, so I have a friend who uses an Android, and she sent me a picture, which I got.
Oh.
And I, in turn, tried to send her one, and it just I get the little not delivered message. Yeah.
I suspect, well... It even says in the T-Mobile tech note, verify MMS is enabled. I mean, they talk about this. So
right.
I presume it works. It's very complicated. I mean, you have to set up MMS separately. Boy, there's a lot to do to make this work. But clearly they have settings that are going to make this work on T-Mobile.
Yeah, I tried and I failed.
We also have, and we'll put this on the... Thanks. Boy, the chat room's right on this one. Web7692 is pointing us to a YouTube video, how to fix MMS on iOS 6 on an iPhone 5 with T-Mobile.
Oh, okay.
So maybe this video will help you. It's on the Everything Apple Pro YouTube channel. Everything Apple Pro. It's just a little two-minute video.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll work. Let me know if it does.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's the issue, is you're trying to do this on T-Mobile.
Right. And they told me it would work.
It should.
I believe them.
It should. I think it's probably a question of just getting these. I mean, you could see with this T-Mobile tech note, this is a complicated thing.
Right.
But
and I tried it. And I did what they said. And
yeah. T-Mobile really wants iPhone users to be able to move over to T-Mobile. And, you know, they'll have the iPhone later this year, I believe. So,
well, maybe then it'll work.
Yeah, maybe then it'll work. Try this video and let me know, will you, Annette? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Extreme. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We're talking high tech. It's kind of a user group of the airwaves. Let's get to San Bernardino. Dave on the line from San Bernardino, California. Hello, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Run over to the phone, David. You're on the air. Hello? Okay. Let's see if Grant is there from Sacramento. Hi, Grant. Leo here.
Happy New Year. Long-time listener from Tech TV days as well as a chat room dude.
Yay. Happy New Year to you, too. Thank you. What's your chat handle, Grant?
I'm sorry?
What's your chat handle?
SacMan.
Okay.
But I'm in the process right now of replacing a hard drive on my HP laptop. And I have an image file from May, but I have a new updated image, which I think just overwrote the other one because system disk update, I can only see the one image dated from May 20th. So does that file just get updated?
When you say image, do you mean your system restore?
The VHD file.
Hmm.
VHD files that get created in a system image.
And you only see one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you overwrote it.
Because the backup documents are still dated that, and there's four of those in there, the XML files.
Oh, interesting. But not the data file itself.
I'm sorry?
Not the data file itself.
The data file has the date when I did what I thought was a new image, yeah.
Yeah. Boy, you
so
got me.
The idea is I'll swap out my Fujitsu for my new Seagate and then go ahead and run my emergency rescue disk and get into the image and then just let it go, I guess.
Yeah, well, you only have one, so you unless it's possible, and I'm not familiar with how Microsoft does this. It's one of the reasons I don't like using these blob backup systems because you can't tell what you got. It is possible that one data file has all three images. And that's why the XML files are there. They're just to say where to get that data out of the image.
Mm.
So I don't know.
I thought I was going to see a multiple
selection. Yeah, one would think there'd be three. There'd be three VHD files, but it may be that it just used. It didn't want to make multiple files. It just uses one file and just kind of copies.
I'm hoping that's the case because when I went out on the internet and asked the question, "Why isn't it showing up?"
Yeah.
Was given the instructions to go into disk management and make my external drive where it sits active or mounted. Is that the same phrase?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Yeah, active means, yeah, it's sort of like mounted.
So anyway, I'm
they do have to be, well, I'm not sure if that's good advice either. I'm looking in the chat room because, you know, that's probably the place to get the answer on this. I am not familiar with this system. I generally don't use the Microsoft Backup program for this very reason. I don't know what I've got there. It's just a blob.
Are you going to use Deep Freeze then going forward?
You know, on Windows 8, I haven't decided what to do, but I think that that's
probably Windows 7.
Right. That's the, and this is what we were talking about last hour, which is I had not used the Windows 7 imaging capability, so I'm not familiar with it. Windows 8 has a reset capability, which I may well use. I think that's a kind of cool idea. But I have not tried the Windows 7 imaging. I use third-party imaging packages.
Well, I'd rather buy a new computer, too.
But. No, there's free ones, you know. There's Clonezilla. Ease US has a free one. I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying that's what I do, so I don't know.
And so, I'm in the middle of my CCNA, so I've got to try.
You got to use a Microsoft solution. I don't think that's any problem. I don't think that's any problem. My suspicion is, and I think you're just going to have to try it and see, that all of the data is in there. It's possible you overwrote it, but I think more likely it's an incremental upgrade. And that's why all three of those XML files are surviving. They are the files that say, here's what's in that blob. And I bet you can restore three different ways from that blob. My guess, but I don't know. And I've been stalling to see if the chat room has a solution. Mechman says, yes, it does save in a single file and updates the date every time you access it, but the data files stay the same. So it sounds like, yes, in fact, that everything's in that one blob, according to Mechman in the chat room. Good to talk to you, Grant. We'll see you in the chat room. Dustin in Kansas City, Kansas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I've got a question for you. I've got a computer I got, or I've had it for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. Got back from a trip over New Year's, and it didn't start up. It started up, but I got no video.
Yeah, you're supposed to put it up in blocks, drain the oil out of it, I believe. Oh, no, that's a car.
Yeah, exactly. So I got no video, so I went and bought a new video card thinking that was going to fix it. And I replaced it, I booted it up, and I still got no video. The system fans, the hard drive, the DVD all start up when I push the power.
So when you say no video, it doesn't mean I'm not seeing my YouTubes. It means nothing's coming on the screen at all.
Right. It acts like it doesn't boot. But, I mean, I hear...
But you hear it going, whoosh, and you don't hear a sequence of beeps, do you?
No, I don't hear any post beeps or anything like
post,
that.
Post, yeah, that's what I'm looking for, the post code, power on self-test. If for some reason, for instance, let's say all the RAM, while it was stored, all the RAM chips popped out, then it wouldn't be able to display anything on the screen. It wouldn't be able to get very far at all. It would then beep at you. And right. And the number of beeps, would say, if you looked it up, would say, there's no RAM. So make that better. So I suspect that it is possible. You know, sometimes when you store a computer, those cards can work their way out. Is it a desktop or a laptop?
It's desktop. And I've actually pulled the RAM sticks. I've pulled everything off of it and tried to just boot.
Okay. But even reseed it. Make sure that, I mean, a few months you shouldn't get corrosion, but let's say maybe it got corroded. Look at the contacts that go into the slots. Make sure they're not corroded.
Okay.
Things
so
like
it
that.
It wouldn't even boot up if the RAM was bad? It wouldn't?
It would not boot up. It would boot. It would do what it's doing, but it wouldn't be able to display anything on the screen. Usually you'd get a power on self-test beep code saying, because it can't display anything on the screen if there's no memory. Similarly, if the video card had worked its way out. Now, the other thing you should check, of course, is the cable to the monitor.
Yeah, I checked that. I swapped out with a laptop.
Good man.
I was able to plug straight in.
Good man. Yeah, take the cable and the monitor, plug it into a laptop. It's working fine. Well, we know that subsystem is fine. We're going to set that aside.
Right.
Since it wasn't plugged in, right, when you didn't use it? It was just sitting there, right?
Well, I'm not sure. It may have been on.
So it could be. It could have been on. Okay, then it could have had a power surge. It could have failed. If it's not on and it's unplugged, it's unlikely that anything would fail because nothing's happening. So in that case, it'd be more likely corrosion or a card working loose. If it was on, who knows, maybe you got a power surge and the video card got fried. It's possible.
Well, that's what I thought it was. So I went and replaced, I went and bought a new video card and plugged it in.
Right.
And it doesn't work.
CMOS battery might have died. Although usually it'll still boot. It'll just say, hey, you know, I don't know what the heck.
Usually it says, I don't know what time it
is. Yeah, what time is it? I don't know. Where am I? Who am I?
Exactly.
So you don't get any beeps. You get nothing on the screen at all. And how about lights? Do you get lights on the motherboard light up or anything like that?
You know, I've never paid attention to see if there's any lights on this motherboard, but I don't see any when I boot up.
Okay.
The strange thing is, it's like the fan on the heatsink to the processor spins.
That doesn't mean anything. That means it's getting power from the power supply.
Okay, so even if the motherboard's fried, it would still do that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It could be the power supply died, or it got it messed up enough so that it's not giving enough power for the discs to spin up or something like that too. The lack of a postcode is bizarre.
Yeah.
That probably means something more serious. Maybe the BIOS got wiped. It's kind of hard to know really what's wrong at this point. This is despite the fact that it's not a sealed box. Once you get to the motherboard level, it's kind of a black box. You don't know what's going on there.
Right. That's what I was concerned
about. I'm not sure. I would look at the power supply for sure. I might replace the CMOS battery. Otherwise, I'm not sure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Maybe the chat room will know. Maybe they'll have a suggestion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, last segment of the weekend, and I'm heading to Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show. When I come back next week, I'll talk about what I saw down there. I mentioned about 15 minutes ago that Windows 8 seemed to me to be a failure. And I have to say, it's not 100%, there's not 100% of agreement. Let's put it that way. Earl LaPonce tweeted me, I have Windows 8, generally love it, have had no problems with it, like the interface much, I give it a thumbs up. Eric Griswold said, Leo Laporte comes out and says it, Microsoft blew it with Windows 8. Michael Greer tweets me, my wife hated Windows 8 until we installed Retro UI. Check it out, retroui.com. It's an interesting utility that does, in fact, well, it doesn't turn it into Windows 7. And I think there are programs that'll do that. But it does give you kind of a start menu. I don't think that's exactly a vote of confidence for Windows 8. make Windows 8 act more like Windows 7 is probably not the response that Microsoft's looking for. The truth is, under the hood, it pretty much is Windows 7. It's that new interface that's going to be throw people. And I don't, frankly see a reason to upgrade. If you like Windows 7 and you're used to the interface, why change the interface? Why not just stick with Windows 7? I don't think Windows 8 gives you, well, maybe there, I guess there are some new features. I'm not sure. I have to say, I'm watching the football games this weekend, of course, and Microsoft's loaded them up with ads for Windows 8. And I have to say, is it just me, or do they not look exactly like the iPod ads? The dancing Surface tablets look exactly like the dancing iPods. I just don't know. I don't know if Microsoft is on the right track. I worry a little bit. Let's try Dave in San Bernardino again. Hey, Dave, are you there now?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm
hey,
sorry.
No, no problem. That's fine. What can I?
The weird thing that happened. I was sitting here waiting for you to call me, and it started hailing. It never hails in San Bernardino, so I was out looking at it.
What the hail?
Yeah. So
anyway, wow! I hope you're all right. Were they golf ball sized hail nuggets?
No, they're just small ones right now, but it seems like it's starting and stopping, and every time it starts again, it's a little bit bigger, so who knows?
Hail is kind of scary. I agree. Worries me.
Well, I haven't seen it in years. So
yeah.
I had to go. Sorry.
Quite all right.
What I wanted to know was, I have all kinds of ideas. I've been in electronics for a long time. I was in the Air Force for 20 years and did electronics, and I work out of my shop here at my home, and I come up with all kinds of ideas, and I have some ideas for new apps for the Android, but I have not a clue on how do you go about making an app or having someone do it for you, or is there a way that you can go online to learn how to do it yourself, and how do you promote it? How do you sell it? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, I could talk a little bit about that. I mean, one of the things I should say right up front is that an idea is the easiest part of anything. Everybody has ideas all the time. The trick is execution. So yeah. I get this call every month. Somebody says, I've got an idea for an app that I can't even tell you. If I told you, it's going to revolutionize the world, but now what? Well, you've got the easiest part. And I think you're an electronics whiz. This is good. This is a chance for you to learn to program. Do it yourself. Don't hire it out.
Well, where do I go to learn how to do that? I mean, there's
lots of ways. Now, there are classes online you can take. Have you done any programming, Dave, at all?
Well, I did a little bit because I used to be in the semiconductor field and sold a Megasonic system and for many years. And anyway,
you're comfortable with technology. You're comfortable with programming. It's going to be easy for you to learn. It's going to be a great hobby. And, you know, worst case, you don't make $1 million. At least you learned a new skill and you had some fun.
Right. That's what I'm asking.
Then that's what I would do. You could go to Elance.com and hire a programmer. And, you know, if it really is a great idea and you happen to get a good programmer and then you market it properly, maybe you'll make $1 million. It could be the next Angry Birds or maybe not. There's far more people who don't make money on it. So I'd say don't assume that you've got an idea that's going to change the world. This is just merely say, hey, I've got an opportunity.
Yeah, I just think it'd be fun.
Yeah, exactly. So of course, you can always go to developer.android.com. Google wants you to do this. And they have the software to develop for Android is free. It's if you have any kind of computer, it's a simple thing to do.
Right.
And it's a lot of fun. You'll be writing in Java using Google's toolbox, the GWT toolbox. You'll probably, the free editor that they offer is called Eclipse. It's an open source editor. It's great. It's fun. I mean, you're going to learn, and what you're going to learn is modern programming skills that will be very useful for you. Now, I'm going to tell you some other places you can go to learn, but that's the mothership. And so you certainly should bookmark developer.android.com.
Okay.
Codeacademy.com offers free basic coding programs. They're very easy to use, and you can do it in a moment. You know, it's very straightforward, very simple. If you want to prototype your program before you kind of go much farther, you might take a look at App Inventor. This was created by Google to make it easy to write Android apps. They gave it to MIT, and now MIT supports it, and they have the teaching tools, the informational tools, everything you need. It is not as sophisticated as doing it from scratch, but it's certainly a good way to prototype an app.
Okay. Well, that helps a lot. I really appreciate it. I had one little question. Just take a second. I noticed from one of your previous callers, I was thinking about getting Windows 7. I have XP now, and you said something about where you can go and it will compatibility do something?
Yeah, Windows 7 has a compatibility mode that will trick programs into thinking you're running Windows XP.
I can use XP programs off my old drive.
Most of the time, you don't even need to do that. They just work. But if they don't, that's a second solution.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
Yep.
Well, yep. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Dave, I think this is a great project. I think young or old, programming is one of the best hobbies you can have. And there's lots of places that you can learn it. There's also Coursera. This is kind of a neat place where you can learn all sorts of things. These are college-level classes for free, including programming, but also economics, electronic engineering, introduction to networks, risk management, every subject. And these are courses from Duke and Vanderbilt, University of California, and Stanford. I mean, these are great courses. So another place you can go, you know, this is a great time for somebody who's a self-starter, who wants to learn. The world is out there. You could do anything. You can learn anything. You can get the equivalent of a college education absolutely free. You don't get the piece of paper. That's the only thing you don't get. Sarah in Ennett, California. I think you're going to be our last call of the day. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
I got bad news for you. You want to use Flash on a Galaxy Note?
Yeah, well, I have a program for my business allows me to load a bunch of phone numbers into the computer.
Can't do it.
But it works with Flash.
Can't do it.
Is there anything similar that I can
No,
use?
Adobe has stopped making it.
Yeah.
Because it never worked very well anyway. And, of course, Apple started this by saying, we're not going to support it, period.
Mm-hmm.
You can sideload it if you can find a copy of it. Where this program is written for what? For your desktop?
Yeah, it's for the desktop. And I used to be able to use it from our tablet, but it just recently stopped.
Yeah, Flash is dead. That's a good question. I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.